What is up, bosses? Before we kick off this episode, I want to tell you about our brand new sponsor, and I'm really happy that they are on Team iLab because it's a platform that Johnny, Sam, and myself have all personally invested in. I'm talking about Fundrise. They make investing in private real estate as easy as investing in stocks, bonds, or mutual funds. I'm going to tell you all about them during the break, but if you want to check it out right now, just head over to fundrise.com. .com/likeaboss. That's FUNDRISE.com/likeaboss. Fundrise.com/likeaboss. Let's kick off this episode. Like I said, I'll tell you more during the break.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey, bosses, this is Johnny, and welcome to another episode of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I'm out here in Kyiv, Ukraine, actually about to board a train in an hour to Kharkiv, second city, and Sam is back in the U.S. in South Carolina.
The rebel state, baby. I'm back.
Oh, yeah.
I'm back. To all of our U.S. patrons, I'm back.
They miss you. They miss you. Is that your house that you bought?
This is the house I bought.
And nice.
Not a great representation I have. But this house is so nice. I love this place, man. You should actually see the desk that just got delivered 10 minutes before we kicked off recording this episode. Big, beautiful mahogany desk.
Nice.
And man, I'll tell you what, I have now three wine coolers here that are packed with premium wines. Ooh. It's spring. There's rabbits and deer running my backyard. Tonight I'm going to make a fire pit and have, you know, some of the community over. It's just like, it's just such a beautiful spring anywhere in most places, you know, and probably even in Kyiv. It's just such a nice time of year.
It is.
It's just full of life. And I love the greens and the blues. It just brings it brings the twinkle to life, you know, twinkle to the eye, twinkle to life. It's a beautiful time to be alive. And it's a beautiful time to record an episode of Invest Like a Boss with you, Johnny. We're going to be going back to the old school. We're going to be doing a 101 episode. And this is something I've actually wanted to do for a long time. And building up to it, we just published an article. It's one of the two or three articles that we've published on Invest Like a Boss. But it is called How to Invest X, Beginner's Guide to How Do I Invest X? Because we get this question a lot, Johnny. I know throughout the podcast and individually, people come up to us or write us and say, hey, I've got X, and X could be anything from $2,000 to $2 million. And people want to know what to do with it. And that question is so complex. There is no generic response that can address it. You have to think about a lot of things. So what we're going to do in this episode is we're going to break down exactly what you should consider when inevitably at some point in your life, you will have this question. Everyone has this question at some point, and we wanted to provide some guidance and an outline for how to address it.
Yeah, definitely. And this is a really well-written article by Sam. So go to investlikeaboss.com, click on resources, and you can see the article there. It's called Beginner's Guide, How Do I Invest X Dollars? So the funny thing is when people first just say that in the comment section of any forum or even our Facebook group, people would just start giving what they would do if they had an additional X amount of dollars. So, you know, if they came in to an additional 50 grand or 100 grand or $1 million, they're like, yeah, I would invest in, you know, I would buy more VTI or I would buy, you know, XYZ. But what is really important, the question people should be asking is, what are you already invested in? What is your financial situation? How old are you? When do you plan on retiring? How much are your monthly expenses? Yeah. And this is a good article to kind of break that part down.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things that we always talk about on the podcast and key narrative is time. Time invested in a market and total time is one of the leading indicators of performance. And just as an example, we put this in the article that a 21-year-old who invests $5,000 a year, making an average of 8% annually, which you can do historically through index funds, would have accumulated $1.46 million by the time they're 61 years old. But the reason that is so profound is that if you just saved that $5,000 and put it in basically a no interest savings account, that same amount of money would be worth only $200,000. So the difference is $200,000 would be is I'm sorry, 1.46 million instead of 200,000 just by investing in an index fund, which is the exact same maintenance as investing money in a bank account. Might even be less maintenance in certain ways.
Yeah.
You don't have to deal with a banker. So
yeah.
So it's a profound thing to get started early. But getting started early is not just, I have money, slamming it into index funds. You should really be thinking about what to do with that. And that's what we're going to cover in this episode.
Yeah, so I love it. So the kind of point number one is, how much money do you have in an emergency fund? You know, and it's pretty easy to calculate this, is how much do you need to live off of? If you lost your job tomorrow, how long can you go without, you know, moving back into your parents, without sleeping on the street? You know, for me, when I'm living in Thailand, my cost of living are, $1,000 a month, which means I can save up, 6 months of living costs by having $6,000. If you're in a high cost city, you might need 10 times that amount.
Exactly. And so the first thing you want to consider is exactly that emergency fund. So again, use whatever number you're comfortable with in this example, but we're just saying someone comes out to us and says, hey, I've got $15,000 in the bank. You know, what do I do with that? Well, the first thing would be, do you have emergency funds set up? You know, do you have any other cash? Is that your only cash? Do you have a job? How reliable is that job? But what you don't want to do is take that $15,000, that's all the money you have, and now you want to go ram it into a real estate fund that you can't get out of for 5 years, right? You need that for your emergency fund. So in this example, if that was your only $15,000, you have kind of one source of revenue that you could be fired from at any time, the answer would be do nothing with it. Keep it in the bank. And in fact, you probably want to expand on it to make sure that you have an emergency fund that can cover you for 3 to 6 months. Everyone should have that emergency fund.
Yeah. And if you have kids, you might want a 12-month emergency fund or even 24 months. I mean, you know, for Sam and I, we're like, you know what? Screw it. 3 to 6 months is plenty enough. You know, we can, we're on month of rents. You know, usually, I guess Sam has kind of a higher fixed cost, but I can just say, all right, let me just move into a cheaper apartment if I have no money. Let me move in with a friend and move back home. Maybe I'll move in with Sam in South Carolina and really keep my expenses down.
Johnny and I are on the buddy system. So if one of us goes broke, we move in with the other. But if both of us go broke at the same time, we have to tap into that emergency fund.
Yeah, definitely. So I like this order because a lot of people might be thinking, or asking, well, shouldn't I be paying off my debt first? You know, let's say you have a credit card, paying 24% interest or something crazy. It seems like it makes sense to throw that 15K or whatever you have to pay down the debt. The problem is, if you pay down that debt and you have $0 in account, you might be sleeping on the street next month. So it's important to have that emergency fund, first kind of taken care of. And when we say emergency fund, we really mean like just leave it in a actual bank account on the side. Mm-hmm. It can be a savings account. It can be something like Marcus or Ally, but don't put it in some crypto tether fund or even things like Worthy Bond, which I like as a relatively liquid, relatively safe place to put money, but I wouldn't put my entire emergency fund in it.
I agree completely. You want to make sure that this is liquid, which means you get fired tomorrow, you are able to draw that money out to buy your groceries, buy your beer, which inevitably you'll need if you just got fired and only have 10K in the bank, and to survive and get back on your feet. So that's the emergency fund. We talk about it a lot, but make sure you have it no matter what wealth level you're at. Make sure you have it because it's actually almost as important as you go up in wealth, because what you don't want to do, what an emergency fund also does, it gives you liquidity so that if you come into hard times, you don't have to sell investments that might be down, like index funds that might be 20% down. You don't have to sell those to get liquidity and cash. You actually have that money set aside to live off of while hopefully things return to normal.
Yeah, I agreed. So the second one is actually kind of a surprise. It's something I actually personally didn't really think about, but it actually makes a lot of sense. And it's basically take advantage of free money. I remember when I was first working out of university, I worked for a big US corporation called Honeywell. And the HR person asked me to fill out a form. They say, do you want to participate in the 401k program? And I was like, what is that? And they're like, well, it's for your retirement. And I was like, I don't know. And they're like, well, we'll match up to 50% of what have you put in? And I was like, wait, hold up. What do you mean you'll match 50%? And they're like, yeah, if you put $100 in a month, we'll match it and we'll give you another. And I thought it was another 100% and $100. But it turns out, I think it's, they'll match 50%, which means if I put in 100, they'll put in $50. Either way, that is amazing. That is free money. I mean, that is like 50% interest. Like there's no way you're going to get that anywhere else. And this is something that everybody should be taking advantage of.
Right. And we have to remember, when we're talking about the masses, most people are employed, right? Versus own their own business, self-employed or an entrepreneur. So this will apply to a lot of people out there. It's literally free money, and it's free money from who you want it from most, your boss. So get out there and get it. This should definitely be number two next after the emergency fund. Someone comes and says, I got X to invest. Okay, you got your emergency fund set up? Yep. I got 3 to 6 months worth of liquid savings. Great. Have you contributed to employer match 401k? No, I haven't. Boom. That's your next move. Go get that free money. Some of these programs I've heard are up to 100% match. Now they have caps on it. Like you can't do 100% of your salary, but you might be able to do 10% of your salary and they'll match 100%. But I think 50% is pretty common, and that is free money. So get out there and get that. And that should be your next priority after the emergency fund.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's even more powerful than paying off a high interest credit card, because, you know, at 24% a year, it's crazy high, but a 50% match or 100% match is double or, you know, four times that amount. So it sounds crazy having the, you know, 401k as number two, but it actually makes sense to kind of get those earnings before you even pay off the debt.
And it's sadly, it feels better to get that win than to pay off crappy debt.
Yeah. And I would say the only caveat to this is this money you cannot really touch until you're, you know, 59 and a half. That might go up as we even get older. I have a feeling that the government might push that up to 65, but either way, it's money that we need to have when we retire anyways. I think I have about $18,000 in my 401k that I completely forgot about, which is a good thing that I forgot about it, because that means it'll continue to grow. And when I retire one day, I'll have that as kind of a super emergency backup that I couldn't have touched even if I wanted to.
Or you have that as super play money. But if it's $18,000 now, when you retire, let's just call it 50, 60 grand. You know, it's like a bonus chip that you didn't realize it. And you're like, you know what? I didn't even need this. Let's go out and blow it. Hey, Sam, what are you doing next weekend? I rented a boat in Turkey and unlimited buffet, fine dining, lots of exotic animals. Come and hang out. All right. Sure thing, Johnny. Thanks.
Yeah. Keep
blowing your 401k on me. Appreciate that.
By the way, I actually literally just booked a flight to Turkey 2 minutes before I called you.
I love it.
and they have from Ukraine, they have these deals for like $300 a person that's unlimited, like on the water. So
wow,
we can do it right before we cash in that 401k.
Why don't you pledge your 401k to me, and I'll pledge like one of my lost investments to you?
Oh yeah, great. I'll take one of your annuities.
How about this? You we'll put your four. I will contribute one Bitcoin to the Sam and Johnny 55-year-old fund, and you contribute your 401k. And I think that's a good bet. What's going to be worth more, one Bitcoin in 30 years or your 401k, which is pretty predictable, probably be worth like 50 or 60 grand.
You know, that actually would be a good bet. If we can find some way to put that under contract, I'll do it.
Escrow, baby. Escrow.com.
All right. So up next, we have finally pay down your debt. And this can be anything from high interest debt, like credit card debt, which none of you should be in anyways, or kind of low interest debt, or like what people call good debt or okay debt, like student loans or mortgages. I don't think any of this debt is good debt unless it's making you money, but there's terrible debt, like credit card debt. And then there was like, you know, it's not going to kill you right away debt.
Yeah. So I would look at this first as come up with a definition of what's bad debt. So I think bad debt is anything that's high interest. We're talking probably 8% plus. If you have any of that stuff, if you're in the double digits of interest rates, that stuff is toxic and you have got to get rid of it. And that's got to be a high priority in life, is to start getting rid of that, paying that down. Now, if you have low interest debt, like a mortgage, that's not necessarily a bad place to be. A lot of mortgage rates right now are kind of 2.5% to 4.5%. You might have student loans that are almost interest-free. So some of that stuff, you have to make a smart decision here, right? Because you can invest money into non-taxable accounts, which you're almost definitely going to get a better return. You can invest money into taxable investments and you might get a better return. So this is one thing that you really need to make a judgment call on, is how reliable is your income? How bad is your debt? You know, if you have 3% debt on a house that's increasing in value, you know, you make a judgment call on it, right? If you're comfortable with paying that off each month, fine. But if you have any toxic debt, we're talking 8% plus, especially double digits, do everything you can here to start paying that down as quickly as possible. From a financial position, it's poison, but even from a psychological place, it's just a nasty place to be. So you want to get rid of it at all costs.
Absolutely. And actually, I think we can do a whole episode on debt. I mean, we probably should. So if you guys have any questions about paying off debt, if any of you are in debt, let us know in either the Boss Lounge or the comments, or if you're Patreon, ask there. If you want to support the show, go to investlikeaboss.com, click on Patreon, and you'll have kind of first dibs at questions and topics. But I think this is a very important topic that a lot of people don't spend enough time on.
I agree completely. So let's review quick. Someone comes to Johnny and says, Uncle Johnny, I've got $30,000. What do I do with it? Uncle Johnny will say, well, first, Mr. Nephew or lad, have you set up an emergency fund? Yes, Uncle Johnny, I've set up an emergency fund. I have enough to cover 3 to 6 months of my life if I get fired or run out of money or run out of income. Great. Uncle Johnny says, have you matched your employer 401k? Oh, yes, I've taken a great advantage of that. I'm investing and they're matching 50%. Excellent. All right, little lad, how about your debt? Tell me about your debt. Well, I've got some credit card debt outstanding. Okay, so you're going to pay that off, right? So we've got those three covered. Now, Uncle Johnny, what's next? What happens if I've covered my debt? I've got emergency funds set up and I'm already matching my, I'm already getting the benefits of employee match 401k.
So the only thing better than free money is tax-free dollars.
Boom.
Holla. So first you want to max, or maybe grievances. But first you want to max out these non-taxable accounts, right? So it could be any kind of retirement account. I have a Roth IRA. You can also do like a SEP IRA or something called a health savings account. So let's actually break down what those are.
Sure. So, I can talk about the ones that I use in the USA, and for everyone out there, international, high chance that your country offers something comparable. It's going to be a different language, but something comparable. So in the US, there's what's called a Roth IRA. In each year, you can contribute to your Roth IRA as long as you have earned income. You can't contribute if you only have investment income, but if you have earned income, you can contribute up to what I think right now the limit is $5,500 a year to your Roth IRA. And that money goes in and it grows tax-free forever until you take it out, but you can't take it out until you're about 60, I think, 59 or 60. Mm-hmm. But it's a beautiful thing. You know, I stopped contributing to my Roth IRA for about half dozen years. I regret it. But I'm watching that money each year grow tax-free. And when I'm 60, I'll pull it out without paying any money in tax. So that's the Roth IRA. Johnny, do you have any others that you want to cover? I have a health savings account I can talk about.
Yeah. So let's quickly talk about the my Roth. So basically, I think I opened mine with Vanguard. It wasn't that hard to do, but I think I had to mail in paperwork, which is crazy, which is kind of one reason why I love Vanguard. But at the same time, you know, they're kind of a legacy website that probably needs an update. Mm-hmm. But I was maxing it out, you know, especially when I had a lot of earned income. I didn't contribute this year because I didn't have that much earned income. I think I actually had, you know, just like a very standard, like maybe 40 grand income or something. Most of my actual income was through dividends or interest payments or kind of things that wouldn't be considered you know, like an employer income or something. But I am probably sitting on like some, a lot of, you know, quite a bit, maybe like, I think it's close to 200 grand or at least 100 grand in my Roth IRA. And it's just going to sit there until I retire. So it's kind of good that I can't touch it. I can't use it. I can't sell it to, you know, buy a house. So like, it's nice that it's, I'm not tempted to cash anything out. I'm not tempted if the stock market goes down because I just can't do it. I mean, there are ways to kind of withdraw a bit and pay a penalty or use it to buy a house in the US or something, but it's not worth it. Just if you put that money in, just think of it as I'm leaving it there. And so I remember
that is the one caveat that when we're talking about investing in this, you have to be thinking about investing it until you're 60. Now there's a lot of reasons why that might scare you. That's the exact reason why I stopped investing in mine for 6 years. Cause I thought, well, I might not even live to 60, or, you know, I could invest this money better now in myself or into my own business versus putting into here. But this is why you probably wouldn't invest everything that you have available into this, but it makes so much sense because the compounding tax-free growth of this over the course of 30, 40 years of savings is just incredible. And we're all going to, you know, for all of us that are fortunate enough to make it to 60, we're still going to want to have fun and spend money. So having all that money available, then I think we'll really thank our younger selves.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, unless the government pushes up that number to 65, which is probably going to happen by the time we get there.
So, well, you know, they do occasionally make considerations. Like during COVID, they made some provisions that said you could pull some money out of your Roth IRA and or you could spend some money for just living. So I think in difficult times, they will allow you to draw down on that if needed.
Okay, that's nice to hear. So if you have the high quality problem of making too much money pre-tax, like I did back in the day when I actually had a real business and I wasn't just making YouTube videos, you might max out on your, you know, $5,500 very quickly, and you might, you know, still have just so much money that you're like, oh, I wish I could put this in tax-free. Good news is you can do something called a SEP IRA, which is self-employment plan or something. You know, again, if you're from any other country, there's probably something very similar. Just find out what the version is in your country. You can probably even Google, you know, Roth IRA in Australia or something, and you'll probably get, you know, your version of it, or retirement, pre-tax or non-taxable retirement account, you know, whatever your country is. So that's something to look into, the SEP IRA. And another is actually not really supposed to be an investment account. It's something that you get kind of to pay down your health bills. You want to talk about that, the HSA?
Yeah, HSA. This was a sleeper. And if my accountant's listening, I wish he had tipped me off on this one before, but I never got advice from anyone to invest to contribute to a health savings account, HSA. And I think 2 years ago, we did a dedicated episode on it. I started reading about it. We had on a guest and I was like, wow, why have I not done this yet? And ever since then, I've contributed to my HSA every year. And it's been one of the best things I've done through doing this podcast. Why? Because I contribute $3,500 a year to this HSA. I get a tax deduction on that money. So each year that's reducing my tax bill by somewhere around $1,300 straight off the top, $1,300 less tax.
Wow, nice.
I'm paying. That money goes into a very simple account that's connected to my Bank of America account, $3,500. And for anything medical related, I have a debit card that I can just spend that money on. And so far, each year, I've spent that whole $3,500 because it's not just limited to doctor visits and stuff. You can get all types of medical preventing devices. You could buy, for instance, a good mattress with it. You could get massages with it. You could get, for instance, Invisalign with it for your teeth. I mean, there's a wide variety of things that you can spend HSA money on. But the good news is if you don't touch it, it also can be invested and it can grow tax-free. On top of this, there are ways that you can get it out before the age 60 without penalty. So there's actually a lot of things that HSA has going for it, but the contribution limits are a little bit less, $3,500. But I'm so happy that I figured out what an HSA was and how to use it, utilize it in my own portfolio. And I'm definitely committed to doing it each year because it's basically, in my view, a free tax deduction of about $1,300 less in tax I'm going to pay each year. I'm spending the money anyways. And if I don't, it's just going to grow tax-free for future medical expenses. Or if I want when I'm older, I can pull it out and buy a boat with it. So it's there's a lot of benefits to an HSA.
That is amazing. And awesome. I think anybody living in the US should absolutely get an HSA. I mean, I don't know why I haven't done it yet. I think it's mainly because I'm not living in the US and I'm not buying mattresses and stuff. I'm not getting massages there.
But you can use it outside too. You can use it. I use it in Thailand all the time.
Oh, do you? Oh,
I
nice. Use it in Spain. Okay.
Yeah. If I go to an eye doctor or something, I'll swipe it. It's just a debit card. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to look into that. If you guys want more info on what an HSA is, take a listen to our dedicated episode. It's HSA is 101 Health Savings Accounts, and it's Invest Like a Boss podcast number 90.
This week's episode of Invest Like a Boss is sponsored by Fundrise. In 2021, a truly diversified portfolio needs more than just the traditional mix of stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. It needs private real estate. Studies have shown that portfolios with an allocation to private real estate generally delivered a better risk-adjusted return with more annual income and lower volatility over the past two decades, thanks to its track record of consistent performance through multiple market cycles. With Fundrise, you get this level of powerful diversification, and it's available to all investors, and it's easy to use. So whether you're looking to add stable cash flow via dividends, or maybe you prefer long-term growth through appreciation, Fundrise makes investing in private real estate as easy as investing in stocks, bonds, or mutual funds. Like I said earlier, Johnny, Sam, and myself have all personally invested in Fundrise. In fact, I add money to my Fundrise account every single week, and it's exciting because they send you these awesome updates about all the new projects that are coming up. And I gotta admit, I've actually driven to a few and checked them out and been like, all right, I own a little piece of that building. So if you want to see for yourself how Fundrise can help diversify your portfolio, all you gotta do is head over to fundrise.com/likeaboss. You can join 150,000 investors who have built a better portfolio with private real estate. That's fundrise.com/likeaboss. FUNDRISE.com/likeaboss.
All right.
Okay, so we've covered now number four, which is individual non-taxable accounts. Again, no matter where you are in the world, you know, figure out what your country offers in terms of tax-free investments, tax-free savings. There'll be something available for you, I hope. If not, you can go through the 10-year lengthy process of becoming a U.S. citizen, which you'll probably regret, but we'll offer you something here in our homeland.
There you go.
So then we go into number five. The next consideration would be looking back at your company and your employer and seeing if there's other ways that you can invest. You now can look again at your 401k. Have you maxed out what your employer is willing to match on your contribution each year? If so, it still may make sense to go back and invest there in that 401k. Why? Because you're often going to get a tax deduction on those contributions. And that is something that you might want to consider before we get into the next one, which is, okay, you have an abundance of money. Now it's time to invest in taxable accounts.
Yeah. Or buy a house like Sam and I did.
or buy a house. And that's kind of the alternative for this one here is if you're not interested in participating more in your 401k, or that doesn't relate to you, you might want to think about here is when you might want to think about saving for a house or a real estate property, and something that's liquid, maybe just gets a little bit of interest rates, but safe. And you could use this as a future down payment on a house, which is usually historically people's biggest investment of their lifetime.
Yeah, definitely. So I think we can probably do an entire episode on buying real estate, buying houses, especially after mine finally closes, hopefully. And, you know, and Sam and I can kind of deep dive into that part. But now let's talk about the fun one. All right, number six. This is what people think that they should just skip straight to. This is how to actually invest your money. So let's assume you've done one through five. You have, you know, your ducks in order. Now you got X amount tax free. What do you do? You know, you get 15K, 10K, 30K. You sold a business, got 5 milli. You know, what do you do, Sam?
Well, the funny thing is that even after this episode, and even if people believe this to be the correct order to do things, I think most people will still jump straight ahead from skip steps one through five and go straight into investing because it's the more fun bit. But this is where it becomes really interesting, right? And this is where we started the podcast. We weren't really thinking about steps one through five. We were like, what do we do with the money that we have that's more interesting than contributing to our employees' 401ks, et cetera, paying off debts. So this is again, a unique position to be in. And there's no generic response or advice that we could give or anyone could give that is going to make sense. It's a very personal decision, but you know, there are bedrocks to investing that we think that you should certainly consider. I know a lot of people are making their first investment right now into cryptocurrency, which a lot of people would say is crazy, but you know, it's up to you. But I think the most important thing here before we get into possibly recommendations from Johnny and I, is that my general advice, the only general advice that I can give, is to get started and to get experience. Try different asset classes because you'll learn a lot by doing. So to go into complete index funds allocation or to go fully into real estate, I'm more of the try a few things, you know, try real estate in some capacity, invest in stocks in some capacity, invest in fixed income instruments like bonds or even annuities in some capacity. But by doing so, even with a small amount of money, say $5,000 in each one of these asset classes, you're going to learn a lot. And that's part of the process. No one goes from zero to an incredible do-it-yourself investor in 5 days. It takes many, many years. And the earlier you get started and the more you're willing to explore and experience, the more and the better, the quicker you're going to become a better investor and the more it's going to pay off long term.
That is very prudent advice, sir. I was just going to tell everyone to YOLO it all into shit coins or some kind of AMC stock.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that approach, Johnny. It's just whatever. Pick your poison, you know? Pick your poison.
No, but you're right.
You can do stuff like that and get wiped out, and it can either, you know, it can screw you up royally, or you can learn valuable lessons and you can become a much better investor. So it's really all about your fortitude and your forward path, right? We just did an episode on my top eight investing mistakes. And most of those happened when I was like 22 to 25. And a lot of those could have completely wiped me out, crushed my confidence. I may have never invested again, but I was able to learn from those lessons early on. And now those lessons are making me a much, much better investor now when I actually have real money to invest.
Yeah, you're right. And actually what I was going to say is, let's say you don't do it the smart, prudent way and you just, you know, literally just YOLO it into, you know, some kind of cryptocurrency or into some, you know, some hot stock or something. Even if you just put all your money into Tesla or you put all your money into Dogecoin or, you know, whatever the new kind of hot thing is, you might get lucky and you might double your investment and you think, wow, I'm a genius. Like, I made so much money from this. And here's the thing is, you might be right. Like, there's always a chance that that's going to happen, especially in 2021, where everything just goes up. Like, the riskier, the stupider the investment, the more it pays off. The problem with that is even if you get lucky and you make a bunch of money, you didn't learn anything. All you learned is how to take big risks. And I guarantee that most people who learn that as their foundation, they're going to end up taking bigger and bigger risks or different big risks, and they're going to end up just busting out. And what's going to happen then? Either they're going to be broke, in debt, or it's going to, as Sam said, it's going to just scar them, and they're going to be like, well, you know, investing is a scam. Everything, nothing works. Like, I'm just going to stop doing it. So I would say the prudent thing to do is to invest kind of smartly. And if you want to set aside 10% of your portfolio to YOLO on whatever you want, then do it.
We're living in an era like this with our celeb culture and like all the fast money being made. And unfortunately, or for better or for worse, you know, the media likes to showcase the headlines of the quick money being made and the quick money being lost. But it's putting us into a thought pattern of, well, 10% returns are no longer acceptable. Like I should be making, you know, 100x. I should be making 2 times my investment each year. I need to be make fast money, et cetera. You know, I had a buddy that's calling me, he just came into some money, but he's got really high living expenses. You know, he's spending $20,000-$30,000 a year in his living costs, and he doesn't want to curtail that monthly. Yeah. And he can't, like, that's his lifestyle, but also he's got some fixed costs he can't get out of, like alimony and private school for his kid and stuff like this. Like, he just can't get out of that. So he's like, I'm like, look, I can help you model a portfolio, but you have to realistically be planning like this portfolio is going to pay, you know, 8% cash on cash type of thing. He's like, I can't do that. You know, I'll run out of money. I need home runs. I need to make 10x. And I'm like, yeah, but he's like, so-and-so just called me and they're investing in angel.co and they made 5x this year and stuff like that. I have to make 5x. And I'm like, this is all so unrealistic fantasy land, like where you're going to take the millions you have, you're going to invest it in like, this is a good chance you're going to lose it all. Right. So you have to be smart. You have to be practical. Like there's so much back tested data on investing that you can make smart decisions if you kind of stick to the script. There's no guarantees, and past performance doesn't guarantee future outcome. But if you kind of do what's smart, you're limiting your downside a lot. And the way I've always looked at it, at least being an entrepreneur, is I can stick to that script. I can make smart investments that are boring. Remember, good investing is often boring investing, where I know it's going to be stable and it's somewhat predictable. And then that enables me to take a lot more risk as a human and as an entrepreneur. I can go and swing for the fences and try to make 100x in my own ventures, but I have this stuff that's there and gives me a little bit of the peace and security. And I think that's, you know, I think that's my advice here where we're at with number 6, which is we're starting to invest. My advice to anybody would be, you know, do what's smart, stick to the script. If you came and you said, I've got $50,000, I've checked all the other boxes, what would you recommend? You know, I would say, let's get at least a third of that, maybe even a half of that carved off for an index portfolio. And we're going to, this you need to look at and say, this I'm sticking with for 20 years. This is not something that I'm investing in. And maybe in 5 years, I want to take the money out and put it in something else. No, whatever we're going to put in the index funds, you need to think of that as locked up for at least 20 years.
Yeah, you know, you're right about that. But at the same time, what I like about index funds is you could technically sell it whenever you want after 1 year, as long as it's up. You know, it's one of those things where, when I bought my index funds, I was also thinking long-term, you know, I'm going to keep this for 10, 20 years. But at the same time, when it came to, you know, time for me to basically clear up like 150 grand to buy this apartment, I was thinking, okay, what can I sell? You know, how should I get this money? And index funds actually was the kind of the easiest thing that made most sense. After 1 year, all the gains are locked in and they're no longer, you know, a short-term capital gains. They're pretty quick. You know, you can sell, as long as it's up, you can sell it within a few days, the money's in your account. And even I think directly from a Schaub, I was able to transfer that money to Ukraine, my account in Ukraine. So very, very easy. Vanguard was a bit harder to transfer to another country, but you can transfer it to your personal bank account easily. So I personally think that you should have that idea that you want to be able to sit through anything and sit tight, because there might be five years of a downturn and you don't want to be selling it then. Because if you sell it during that time, you know, you lock in those losses and you're screwed. But I have the caveat that as long as it's up, you're welcome to sell it, you know, if you need the money for something else.
Yeah, I agree completely. So it's mostly about mindset, because when you put money in, you never know what's going to happen in the next year or two. So you don't want to go into it thinking, I'm going to invest in index funds for the next 3 years, and then I'll do something different, because there's a fair chance that it could be sideways or it could be even down a lot. When I first put money into Vanguard in 2015, it went sideways, then took a couple dips, then went sideways again. And now it's up like, I don't know what we're up, Johnny, but it's probably up like 60%, right?
Yeah.
But it easily could have gone down. So the idea is, when you're putting money in index funds, you need to think of it as a long-term investment, but you do have that caveat of knowing that there's basically infinite liquidity there. And if you need to get the money out, you can get the money out, which makes it a great investment.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. So I would personally say this, and this is probably what people should have, were looking for, you know, for the entire episode, but trust us, even though it seems a bit, you know, like a lot of information, and some people might have been like, you know, why didn't you guys just put this in the beginning? You know, all that was for your own benefit. But jumping straight to the point, if you had X amount, let's say anything over 10 grand, I would put at least 50% of it in index funds. If you have less than, let's say, 5 grand, I would probably just put it in VTI, which is Vanguard's total US stock market, 3,200 stocks. Very, very easy. But if you have more than that, then I would diversify it a little bit. I would put, you know, at least maybe 10, 20% of it in VXUS, which is the Vanguard International Stock Market. And we've talked about this on a few episodes. The one to listen to first is Invest Like a Boss episode 139. That is the how to invest in index funds 101. And second, you want to listen to episode 173, which is the international allocation. But I would put at least half of it in there. And if you want to make your life very, very easy, just put 100% in there. You know, maybe, you know, 50% U.S. stocks, 50% international.
Yeah, and there's also another reason why, if you have a lower dollar amount, like $5,000, you might want to just put it in all one fund, at least through Vanguard. They have limits that allow you to get into the Admiral's fund. And usually those limits, I think, are 3,000 to 10,000. But if you're in a fund with it and you hit the limit to get into the Admiral's fund, your fees drop a lot. Like the Admiral fund's fees are usually like 0.3% or 0.03% or 0.05%. So you actually get a lower fee by doing so. So it's another thing to consider. Good point, John.
Yeah, I should look into that. So VTI is 0.03, which is already so low that honestly, like, I don't think it made much of a difference. The Admiral shares might be, I don't know. I feel like they're not that different. So you're right though. If you're investing something that has higher fees, by having a higher minimum, that could potentially be lowered, and that would save you some time. I think the only big benefit of the Admiral shares that I saw was, you know, you get like an advisor you can call, and I think you can trade it slightly easier in the off hours or something. But for me, it wasn't a big deal. So I've stuck with VTI really just out of habit, because when I first started investing with them, I didn't have the minimum.
All right. So if you guys are interested in more about index funds, portfolios, check out those two episodes that Johnny just covered. We go over our individual portfolios and allocations and make recommendations on how to get diversified from not just US, but across the world and into emerging markets.
Yeah, definitely. So aside from index funds, what I do, all right, and what I would probably recommend to anyone that's investing over, let's say, 30K. And one of the reasons, another big reason why you don't want to make a ton of small investments, is it's a pain in the butt when it comes to tax season. Each investment you're going to make is going to be another form that you or your tax advisor is going to have to fill out. So if you have 3 grand in each account or 5 grand in each account, even 10 grand in each account, it's almost not worth that extra paperwork. I think that was kind of my one of my biggest regrets when I first started this podcast with Sam, is I would invest every episode. And at the end of the year, I had like 40 different tax forms to fill out, which is why now I'm kind of paring them down a bit.
But Johnny, how much more have you learned through those investments?
Yeah, I did. And it was a ton of fun. And I made money overall. Tough. So I'm happy.
It's tough. But to Johnny's example, if you have $3,000 in account and you're getting a K-1 from that account, and let's just say you make 10% that year, that's $300 you made. But for your accountant to include the K-1 on your tax report, like, might also cost $300 extra. So you might end up washing it out. But there is experience to be gained. But definitely some words of wisdom is every new investment does take more paperwork, more oversight. So you just want to be cognizant of that going into these things. Make sure that it's worth it, either from an investment standpoint or from a learning experience.
Yeah. And luckily my accountant's been super lenient. Like, she's been okay with me having all these forms and not charging me $300 per piece. Yeah. Cause that would be insane. But yeah, in general, it's just like, it's sometimes it's not worth it. So nowadays my minimum investments, I would say, would be 5% of my income. Of my net worth. And more realistically, if I'm not investing 10% of my net worth into any one thing, it's not worth that paperwork. Because ideally, I would want 10 forms a year or less.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a little different. I think I'm closer to like 50 investments, but I am dialing it down a lot more. So I'm starting to axe the ones that that I think are kind of redundant and or just create paperwork. But there was a big accumulation phase of just going into new investments, and it's super fun and learn a lot, but now it's into the consolidation. So Johnny, you said you would put 50% in index funds. So we've covered that. Where would you go from here?
So the other kind of, 50% I would do in, I would spread it out a little bit, right? You might be 25% in some kind of real estate fund. We've had on Fundrise, we've had on Pure Street, we've had on CrowdStreet. Maybe we've had on a couple of them. You can take a listen. I like that because it allows you to participate in the upside of real estate, but without managing it yourself. And then the other kind of, 25%, I would invest in something that sounds interesting, right? It might be the MLPs, like we talked about with Bill Perkins. It might be just putting in worthy bonds and just being happy with the 5%. It really could be any of the, the things we had talked about. I mean, I have 10K in the Art of FX managed Forex account. It's not something that I would put more than 10% of my money in because it is super high risk, but I think it's an interesting thing to have, just like it's kind of, another uncorrelated stream of income or investment income from the stock market.
Yep. I like all those. I think my next move after thinking about the index funds would be some type of real estate fund or some type of personally owned real estate. So if you go into a fund, I like it because as long as it's got good management, let's take Fundrise, for instance. You're diversified across so many different properties. You're diversified against maybe 20 different apartment and housing complexes across the US. So if one of those deals goes bad or doesn't make profit, which is likely to happen, you're okay. It's not going to make a dent in the portfolio. But if you invest in just one project, like you can do on a lot of these different platforms, you could have a bad sponsor, you could have a bad manager, you could have a bad market, you could have a hurricane go through there. You're all in on that one property. It's just like stocks. It's like buying one stock versus buying an index fund. You're way better off historically getting as diversified as possible. And it's the same with real estate. If you can get into a fund like Fundrise, you're covering a lot of ground. I think that's the smartest way to go about it. The other way to consider doing it is just owning your own property. So if you have enough money to put a deposit on a place, and then you want to be active in renting that place out either long-term or through Airbnb, I think that's a good choice because you're in control. But I would never take my next investment and say, I'm going to choose one property to invest in. Maybe it's by one of these platforms or someone I know is buying a house and managing it. I just wouldn't do that because you're giving up too much control and you have too many chips on a single property. Too many things can go wrong. And I would, again, diversification is the key. Personally, I've been really happy with Fundrise. That was one of my first investments back in 2014. I think I've been with them almost 6 years and my gains have been great. The transparency has been great, but also the learning experience, because every time that they invest in a new property that is in your fund, or they sell, or they renovate, make an improvement to, they'll send you out information on it. So you can actually learn a lot about property development and real estate as an asset class just by being a small, I don't know what the minimum investment is, $1,000, I think. But even by being a small investor, you can learn a lot by being in a fund like that.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, I'm a testament that it works because I think I invested. It's so hard to actually tell by looking at my my portfolio, but I put in something like $50,000, and I could see that I've made something like 8,400 in dividends, and it appreciated 6,600, and I withdrew that cash. I think I sold everything June 2020. And I don't remember even why now. I think I wanted to buy a business. And that was one of the things that I sold to buy. But I got the money. Everything was good. So, you know, I can say, yeah, they work.
Oh, you missed a big upswing in the appreciation, buddy. I hate to tell you. Although yeah, you did do good. That. But I'm up. So if you were up 8 + 6, that's 15 on 50. So I don't, what is that? That's like probably...
So I can see it. So in 2018, I was up by 10%. And 2029 is up 13%.
Yeah. So I think I've ripped a lot of gains in the last year. Obviously, US property real estate's on fire.
Yeah.
I think my total gains are up 50%.
Wow.
Since I put money in, which is really, you know, pretty remarkable in that period of time. So quite happy with that.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been fun. So quick fire round. All right. Sam, some gangster buddies like, yo, I got a milli in cash. What should I do with it? I've done steps 1 through 5. Give me two alternatives, either A or B, and I'll pick one.
Okay. Oh, like I come up with the alternatives?
Yeah, yeah.
I would give a very simplified blanket approach to doing this, and I wouldn't give an alternative because it's like you coming to me and asking for girlfriend advice. What should I do with this girlfriend? Like if I say stay with her or I say break up with her and you go that route and it doesn't work out, then you're pissed at me, right? So I would just give general advice. I would not say either invest in this aggressive basket or this conservative basket. I would say here's what I would do. I would put 40 to 50% in index funds that you need to go into with a framework of thinking that you're going to be in these investments for 20 years. You can get the money out if you don't need it or if you need it, but you should be thinking 20 years ahead. I would go into real estate. I would definitely try to pick up your own real estate with that type of money. If you don't own any real estate, I think at that point, it'd be important to probably own your own house in wherever you think you're going to be based, because that gives you a blanket of security. And a physical asset that, you know, that can be uncorrelated with the stock market in a lot of cases. Then I would get into some alternative investments that are just totally not correlated with the stock market, maybe with 15 or 20%. And then I would take 10%. I would make sure you have 10% set aside. That'd be $100,000 on $1 million. That's in some type of mostly liquid savings. Marcus is what we always recommended, even though like you pretty much make nothing on that now, but even just a year ago, it was 2%, which is better than nothing. And then I would take 5 or 10% and invest in something that might really interest you. That might be a friend's business. That might be cryptocurrencies. That might be NFTs or something that is just intriguing to you and you think might, might rip a big return, but it's also something that you want to get into and learn more about and kind of follow the trends.
Wow. Good advice. Probably better than the advice I'm going to give, which is if you don't want to think about it at all, put $900,000 into Vanguard, into 3 funds, 1 international, 1 total US stock and 1, you know, something else like a value fund or something, or, you know, or even just half, right? Like half international, half total US stock market. And then the other $400,000 or $500,000, I would probably just tell them to put in something like, yeah, you know what? It's hard to say, just put that in real estate. Cause I hate that it locks up for 5 years. I honestly know the mindset of keeping things for 10, 20 years is the correct way to do it. But, you know, I didn't think I wanted to buy property. Like I didn't think I'd ever want to buy property. And the fact that, you know, 4 years later, I changed my mind. I'm like, oh, actually I need to free up 150K. And now I gotta want to free up even more money to buy a second one. Like our lives change, you know, you might get a baby. Right. Your lives change. And that's why I would almost say like, look, just put 100% of it in some kind of like stock investment where you can get out anytime after a year, as long as it's up. And that's the hard caveat is, in general, when one thing is up, everything is up. But when one category is down, they're all down. So even though you're diversified in, you know, US stocks, international stocks, and let's say you even have a basket of like, you know, energy stocks or something, chances are if the economy is down, they're all down. So it's hard to say, but I would max out worthy bonds. We had them on the episode, but unfortunately that maxes out 50K. I would max out, I would put, you know, 50 or 100K or maybe even more into something like HP. I don't know if they're still paying 9 or 10% interest anymore, like they used to, but those are nice just to have money coming in every month. And if they want to learn and play, I would tell them to take 10%, put it into a completely separate account, YOLO it and whatever they want. Maybe they might, you know, go up or down, you know, but that's my advice I would give them.
Yeah. Start a business, you know, start a business, fund your own business. That's really a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, the advice that Johnny just gave would replicate what Warren Buffett's advice is to pretty much anyone. And in fact, what he's telling his heirs to do with his money that they're going to inherit, which is put 90% in an S&P 500 fund and keep 10% in US treasuries. And that 10% is not because US treasuries are a great investment. That 10% is their emergency fund. That's their liquidity fund, so that in a time of a recession, they don't panic and have to pull the S&P fund, the index fund money out at a 30% loss. Instead, they can pull out the US treasuries, or they have money coming in that they can survive on, or at least not panic on until the correction's over. Because that's usually people's biggest investing mistake in their life, is investing in index funds and then pulling the money out when we hit COVID or the Great Recession or the dot-com bust or Brexit, or like all these things that are going to inevitably happen, right? So you can avoid that mistake, then you have money to survive on. You're going to do quite well in life.
Yeah, you're right. You know, it's so funny that we keep forgetting about bonds, and it's just because the rates have been so low the last couple of years that we just completely forgot about them. But yeah, you are right. Where if you come into a big amount of money, you should have some money in bonds. I mean, traditionally it was, you know, 60-40 even. But that's when bonds used to pay 5%. Now, for the last couple of years, it was like 0.6%. It looks like now the 10-year treasury rate is actually 1.69, which isn't bad. Like, it's not good, but it's not bad.
It's peanuts. But my municipal bonds are still making 4%. And those annuities that everyone loves to dog me about, my annuities, well, ladies and gentlemen, they're still clicking along at 4%.
That is good.
It feels pretty good. You know, it's the safest investment you could possibly make, safer than a deposit in a bank. Historically, insurance companies are, and it's clicking around long at 4%. Get a statement at the end of the year, you're up 4%. Here's your money. I just wound one up, actually. It can't mature, and I wound it up, and they sent me a check for the full amount. It's great.
Oh, wow. So what are you going to do with that money?
That's a Patreon secret, Johnny.
Oh,
I jump the gun. Yeah.
Okay.
Got some ideas.
You're going to YOLO all of that into altcoins.
I actually am planning something fairly aggressive. I'll talk to you after the episode. But this is a good point, actually, for our Patreons. And anyone that's considering being a Patreon, Johnny and I open up our entire portfolio dollar amounts of where we have all of our money, specifically to Patreons. We do a quarterly update episode where we usually talk about certain portions of our episode, but we also share pie charts of exactly which assets our investments are in. And then we talk about, we show our dashboards and where everything is in. So you can basically emulate and recreate our portfolios exactly if you want to. So if you're not a Patreon yet, please sign up. It supports the show. It pays for Derek's salary. And I have to say, like, this year has been so much better having Derek on board. He's awesome, and we love having him. And it's all because of the Patreon support.
Yeah, absolutely. To be completely honest, this podcast would probably not still be around if we didn't get Derek on board and we didn't have the Patreons paying his producer salary, because Sam and I both were like, all right, well, we've learned everything we wanted to learn from investing. We both, you know, done very well with our portfolios. I grew from like 250K or something to over a million during these 5 years. And both of us were thinking, like, let's hang up you know, hang it up. Like, that was great, but, you know, we're done. But because of you supporters, you listeners, and the Patreon supporting, we managed to be able to hire Derek as a full-time producer, and we're able to make, you know, these episodes for you guys. So if you enjoy this episode, if you enjoyed the Invest Like a Boss podcast and it's helped you or your friends, please consider supporting. Go to investlikeaboss.com, click on Patreon. You can sign up for as low as $5 a month, and you'll have access to our private quarterly updates and mastermind calls, where Sam and I dive deep into our portfolios and we show you exactly what we invest in. Anytime we sell, we put a sell order to let you know that moment, that day, this is what we're selling and why. And every time we buy, we also do a live post as well saying, I just bought this 2 minutes ago. This is why.
If anyone has any ideas for episodes or guests that they'd like to see on the show, just go ahead and give us an email. We'll take a look at that. We actually have a great episode coming up. I'm excited about, Johnny. We're going to be talking about plant-based foods, meat replacements, protein replacement, and possible investments, something that I'm getting really passionate about. I think we're right on the cusp of a massive food revolution to moving towards more sustainable foods and protein replacements. And I think we are just in the early days of big opportunities for investing there, because food is basically an unlimited market, and there's going to be a lot of changes in the way food's produced over the next 20 years or so.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I mean, I'm still going to be eating steaks, but it is an interesting investment. It's kind of like when cannabis got legal. So that's something to keep an eye out for and ear out for. And yeah, that's it. So thanks again to all of our Patreons, but also thank you to everyone who's been leaving these 5-star reviews of the podcast on the Apple Podcast app. So if you're listening on an iPhone, on a podcast app, just type in Invest Like a Boss, scroll all the way down and give it 5 stars, and you can write a review that we may read on this show. This week, I want to say thank you to Kilo Zero, who says, entertaining and relatable 5 stars with valuable detours into non-mainstream asset classes, a valuable addition to any diversified podcast portfolio. I like it.
Love it. Guys, if this was a helpful episode, or you know somebody that's just starting out, whether they're in college or they just got their first job, or they're in midlife and they're just learning to how to invest and manage their personal finances, if you think this is helpful, send them a link to this episode. We'd appreciate it. And there's an adjoining and accompanying article that we wrote that actually has these steps written out and illustrated. So we will leave the links to that in the show notes, and hopefully between the combination of this podcast and that article, it gives people some much needed guidance.
Yep. Very cool. Sam, great article. Thanks for writing it. And it's been fun chatting. So see all of you guys next episode. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.